So hi, welcome to class number three of Megillat Ruth, three of five. I'm glad to be back here with you. So we, up until now, have been concentrating on the first chapter of Megillat Ruth. First, the first five psukim, which discuss, the departure of Elimelech and his family from Beit Lechem to Moab, and then the rest of chapter one, which discusses mostly Ruth and Naomi and their journey back from Moab to Beit Lechem. And today, I want to move on to chapter two, Perek Bet. And here we're going to meet our next important personality, Boaz. So let's jump right into the text. So we are told, Ule Naomi moda le'isha, ish gibor chayin mimishpachat Elimelech ushmo Boaz. Right. So Naomi had it's translated here as kinsman. The word moda is not entirely clear, but it's clearly someone who they knew, either we will find out later on that he is indeed a family member. But in all cases, it's somebody that they know well, someone from her husband's family, Elimelech's family. Ish gibor chayil, he is a man of substance, is how the translation puts it. And the question is, what does it mean? What exactly this, who is this ish gibor chayil? We'll go into that more in a couple of minutes. Ushmo Boaz, his name is Boaz. Vatome Ruta Moavia el Naomi. So Ruth, who is known almost exclusively at this point in the story as the Moavia, the Moabite, she says to her, to Naomi, her mother-in-law, Elchana hasadeh va'alakta va'shibolim, achar asher imtzachein be'inav. I'm going to go out, I'm going to glean among the shibolim, I'm going to go and glean the ears of corn that fall, and I'm going to follow after somebody who will show me kindness, right? Literally someone who I will find favor in his eyes. Now, we know, right, that in the Torah, there is a law, right? It's called leket. It's one of three types of laws that apply to the harvest period, where the field owner has to help out the poor. It says here in Vayikra, Kaf Gimel, so one law is that you have to keep the corner of your field for the poor. There's another law called shichacha, which is actually not in this pasuk. And then there's veleket k'tircha lo telaket. Right, if there are ears of corn, ears of grain that fall, sheaves of grain that fall, you're not allowed to collect them. La'ani ve'lager ta'azov otam ani Hashem elokeichem. Right now. This is a law, meaning this is not a kindness, it's not a chesed, it's something that every Jewish field owner has to do. So it's not like it's something that a kindly person can choose to do out of the goodness of their heart. It is something that is required by Torah law. And so it's interesting that here, Ruth says that I'm gonna find someone who I will find favor in his eyes. Meaning she senses, even before she sets out, that this isn't going to be something that's going to be simple. She can't rely on the fact that somebody is going to help her out simply because not only is she basically is both of those things that the pasuk mentions. She is both an aniya, she is poor, right? And she's a ger, right? She's a convert or a stranger. And she's both of those things, and yet she knows that she cannot be guaranteed help. Right, because she is a Moabiyah, right, and she comes also back with Naomi, who quite possibly the people of Beit Lechem are not so happy with her, right, because of the whole backstory of Naomi and her family. So she knows she has to find someone who will do her a favor, basically, and let her, glean in the fields. Vatomer la lechiviti, right, and Naomi says to her to go. Right, so we see on the one hand, again, it is Ruth here who is taking initiative. Right, Naomi is still kind of sitting back and not doing much, feeling like we saw in chapter one, rather helpless, rather hopeless. No, Ruth is the one who is taking initiative to help the two of them out. We do also note, however, that Naomi calls her Biti, my daughter, as she also does in chapter one, right, which shows a certain closeness. But again, Ruth is the one who is taking action. Vatelech vatavo vitilaket vatilaket basadeh acharei hakotzrim. And she went and she was following after the reapers. Vayiker mikre chelkat asadeh levoaz asher mimishbachat elimelech. Right? And she bimikre, but I forgot to put the red on in the Hebrew, I only did it in English, as luck would have it, right? She happened upon the field of Boaz, right? She didn't go to Boaz's field knowing that he was going to be somebody who would help her out. She happened to come to his field, right? A big stroke of luck, or if, you know, one could also see it as divine plan, right? She bimikre, she happened to come upon his field, which of course turned out be quite a good mikre, a good happenstance. Now back to Boaz for a moment, right? We want to try to get a sense of who he is. Now, somebody at the end of class, I think it was last week, was saying, well, we you know, even if you know just vaguely the story of Megillat Ruth, you know that Boaz is a good guy, right? But why is he not taking initiative, right? We know later in the story, and we'll talk more about this later at a later point. We know that eventually he marries Ruth and eventually he buys the field of Naomi, but why is he waiting? So in terms of that, in terms of the marriage, in terms of the buying of the field, the redemption of the field, so we'll talk about that in depth later, and there's a good reason why he was waiting. But one could also ask, why is he not yet helped out Naomi? Right? She's sitting at home, presumably, you know, in dire straits. Why has this kinsman, this man from the family of Elimelech, why hasn't he done anything to help them? We're going to leave that question just for now. But let's try to figure out what we can glean about Boaz from the Psukim. So first of all, we've already noted that he's called an Ish Gibor Chayil. So Gibor Chayil Ish Gibor Chayil has various meanings in Tanakh. Very often it refers to a warrior, but it also often refers not to someone who is a person of might, right, who fights wars, but someone who is a person of substance, right, an important person, both in wealth and in position. And one senses, as one reads the story about Boaz, is that is the meaning that is meant here. It could be that he was a warrior also. At this point, maybe he's a little bit older in years, but maybe when he was younger, we don't know. But it seems that the central meaning of Ish Gibor Chayil here means that he is a significant individual. And perhaps we can strengthen that position by the fact that later on in Perek Gimel, as you see on the bottom of the sources in front of you, he refers to Ruth sort of as a parallel to himself as an Eshet Chayil, right? Ki Yodea Kol Sha'ar Ami Ki Eshet Chayil At. Right, so if she is the Eshet Chayil, then he is the Ish Chayil. Right, they are fitting for one another. So that perhaps strengthens the idea here that we're talking more about midot, about his qualities, and not necessarily just his might. We also know as we've noted before, Ruth says that she has to go to a field where someone is going to show her kindness. And we will see that in a few moments that is exactly what happens with Boaz. Now, the first thing we see about Boaz, first words that come out of his mouth, is the name of God, right? V'hine Boaz ba mi Beit Lechem, right? Once again, this wonderful chance, or call it the hand of God, however you want to interpret it, right? Just as Ruth happens upon his field, he happens to come along. V'hine Boaz ba mi Beit Lechem v'yomer lakotzrim Hashem imachem. He says to the reapers in his field, right, his workers, the Lord be with you, Hashem be with you. And they respond, yivarechecha Hashem. Right? They say to him, the Lord bless you. Right? So in a book such as Megillat Ruth, this also, right, if we're trying to get a sense of the man, right, this also puts him in a very good light. First of all, before we even get to the words, we can note who he's talking to. He comes and he greets his workers, right? Even though he is apparently, right, an ish gibor chayil, he is a man of status, he is a man of wealth, he is a landowner, right? And yet he takes the time, the first thing he does when he gets to his field is he greets his workers, right? So that already shows something about him. And he says to them, right, Hashem imechem, right? He blesses them, right? Hashem should be with you. When they respond, right, one senses a good sort of rapport that Hashem will bless you. Yael Ziegler has an interesting interpretation of these words, right? She says that he was a man of God, right? That not only is God the first word literally that comes out of his mouth in this story, but what he is saying here to his reapers is not so much a statement or a blessing, but a question, right? Hashem imachem, when you work in my fields, are you working as people who are followers of Hashem? And they answer, indeed, Yivarechecha Hashem. We're acting in a way that will bring blessings upon your field, right? Which is an interesting way of looking at these words. Right, so that's the next thing that we see about Boaz. Boaz comes into his field after he greets his reapers. He then notices Ruth right away. Vayomer Boaz lena'aro, he says to the na'ar, right, the servant or the man in charge of the reapers, hanitzav al hakotzrim, lemi hana'ara hazot. He immediately, upon arrival in his field, he sees Ruth. And that itself also says something about him, right? He knows the individuals who work in his field so much so that immediately upon coming into the field, he sees that there's somebody he's never seen before. These aren't anonymous workers. These are people who he knows, right? He knows these people are, and he asks, "Lemi hana'ara hazot?" There are many interpretations what exactly he's asking, right? The Targum, for example, the Aramaic translation of Megillat Rut says that he's asking, what is her nation, right? Because note, the Hebrew says, or in English as well, lemi hana'ara hazot, whose girl is that? Meaning, whom does she belong to, right? So in the Targum, they say, what nation is she from, right? The implication in that interpretation being that there was something physically obvious about Ruth's that made it clear that she was a foreigner, right? Whether it be that she somehow looked different, maybe Moavim looked different than Yisraelim, or perhaps her manner of dress. There was something about her that made it clear that she was not one of them. That's one possibility. Or like I said, it's also possible that Ruth was just somebody he had never seen before, and he took note of that right away. Vayan hanar hanitzav al hakotzrim. So the nar answers, Vayomer na'ara mo'aviyahi hashava im no'ami miste mo'av, right? He says, yes, she's a Moabite girl who came back with Naomi from the fields of Moab, from the country of Moab, right? Twice he manages in that one sentence to emphasize the fact that she is from Moab, that she is a Moaviyah, and also, you know, mentions that she came back with Naomi. Now, like many things that we've already discussed in Megillat Rut, it's a little hard to figure out how we're supposed to understand the words of the na'ar. It could be purely informative. Boaz asks who she is, and he gives an answer. One could read into it and say the fact that he's emphasizing that she is a Moaviyah, right, has a negative spin that he's saying, and perhaps also that she came back not only to Moaviyah, but she also came back with Naomi, who's a persona non grata in Beit Lechem, perhaps, also is, you know, emphasizing the negative about her. Perhaps. It's hard to say whether it's just informative or it's emphasizing the negative. In the continuation of the Pasuk, there's some more things that are unclear. Vatomer. Now he's quoting what Ruth said when she came to the field. She said, Alaktana va'asafti ba'omarim acharei hakotzrim. She said, when she arrived, please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the reapers. And then he adds, "Vata'amod, vatavo vata'amod me'az haboker va'ad atazeh va'ad atazeh shifta habayit me'at." Right. So, if you look at the English translation, right, she says she has been on her feet ever since she came this morning. So according to that translation, which of course, like every translation is an interpretation, he's basically saying she's been working very hard. She came here, she asked to gather like other poor people who come, and she's been doing it all day. She has barely rested. Because that's another possibility. It could be that he's just informing Boaz the basic facts. However, if you look carefully at his words, there might be something more to it. Note that when she spoke to Naomi, she said that she was going to collect omarim, right, which is like individual grains, stalks of grain, whereas he quotes her as saying that she is coming to collect sheaves, sheaves being a bunch of stalks of grain, meaning that she's picking up the stalks now, which is not what she said. So the question is whether this is just simply, you know, he happened to say it slightly differently, or is it possible he's trying to exaggerate her words, right? That she has come, she's not only taking the individual stalks, but she has the chutzpah to also take the sheaves, right? And she's been doing this all day, meaning she's been collecting quite a lot. So maybe she's trying to, you know, say something not right about Ruth, that she's taking more than her share, that she's doing something that she is not supposed to do. Another interesting possibility is this phrase, right, vatavo vata'amod me'az haboker, right? And that somehow changes a little bit what has been going on. Now, if you look at the picture on the page here in front of you, you see a fairly typical picture of Ruth gleaning in the fields, right? That's the Na'ar and Boaz standing there in the background talking about her, right? So this would go according to the explanation that we have said so far, right? They're kind of like talking amongst themselves about this woman who has been gathering the grain all day. There's another possibility though, that would say that this interpretation that we see in the picture is not accurate. And that has to do with the word ta'amod. Now, the translation here is she has been on her feet. And that seems to make sense. She's been standing all day, meaning she's been walking around gleaning all day. She's been on her feet all day, meaning she's been working hard. But truth is that in Tanakh, the word la'amod doesn't usually mean to be moving around. Doesn't mean something, it's not something that you do while you're walking. The opposite. La'amod usually means, right, that you stand still, you stop. Right? An amud in Hebrew is a pillar, right? Something that stays in place. Even when they talk about servants of a king, it says that they stand before the king. So even though that a servant generally is someone who's running around a lot, but standing before the king means that you are always there waiting to be told what to do, meaning in theory, you are standing before the king, not moving, so he can tell you what to do. When the Tanakh wants to say that somebody, when it's describing the children born to Rachel and Leah, and then it says that one of them has ceased to have children, it says vata'amod miledet, right? She ceases, she stops, right? So the word la'amod doesn't seem usually in Tanakh to imply, you know, hard work and moving around. So it could be that when it says vatavo vata'amod me'az haboker, it doesn't mean that she was out gleaning all day, but she came, she made a request, but I didn't know what to do, says the Na'ar. Right? And so she's been standing here waiting to hear what to do if she's allowed to go and collect in the field. Right? So then this kind of changes things, right? It's not that the Na'ar has said, okay, fine, you know, and she goes in and she collects with everybody else. She has to stay there and she's waiting, right? She's waiting to see if she's allowed to go in, right? We're all kind of familiar with this kind of scenario, right? Imagine you have an interview that you're supposed to have, and you go and you show up at the office where you're supposed to have the interview, and the boss is late, and you're standing there and you're waiting and you're twiddling your thumbs, not sure what to do with yourself. Everybody else is rushing around doing their job, and you're just waiting there and waiting there and waiting there and waiting there, you know, because you just have to wait for the boss to show up to give you the interview. How the boss reacts when he comes in finally after you've been waiting there forever says a lot about that person, right? How he treats you once he finally comes. And we see that the way that, now of course this is slightly different because Boaz didn't make an appointment with her, right? He didn't know that she was going to be there, but it's interesting to see how he reacts to her, right? So the Na'ar says what he says, right? Whether you see it as, you know, just giving the facts or somewhat speaking negatively about her. And then, Vayomer Boaz el Ruth, right? Boaz does not even respond to the Na'ar at all. He immediately turns to Ruth, right? And it it's significant to note that this is the first time in the entire Megillah that she is referred to as Ruth. Before, she's either somebody's daughter-in-law or sister-in-law or wife, or most of the time, the Moaviah, the Moabite. Here she is Ruth. She is a person, you know, of herself, right? And he speaks directly to her, right? And what does he say? Halo shamat biti, right? First of all, let's note that he calls her biti, my daughter, right? Obviously a term of kindness, of endearment, right? Halo shamat, right? Listen to me, right? Listen to my words, he said. Halo shamat, Viti al telchi lilkot besadecher, vegam lo ta'avori mize. Right, don't go anywhere else. Don't go glean in a different field. I want you to stay here. And he says it twice. Don't go and don't leave. Don't leave from here. Right, twice he says it. Vechor tidbakin im na'arotai. And I want you to stay close to my na'arot, to the workers, the female workers who work for me. I want you to lehadbik, to stick with them. Right, so this word tidbakin, we've seen it before with Ruth, right? When she insists on staying with Naomi, right? It's but Orpah leaves. It says Virut davkaba, Ruth stuck with Naomi, right? So here he is telling her, I want you to stick with my na'arot, with the female workers in my field. Enech enaich basadeh al asher yiktzorun v'halachti achar v'halachti. Sorry, v'halacht achareihen, halot tziviti et ha-ne'arim levilti nageech. Right, you are going to walk after the people who are reaping. I've told my ne'arim, I've told my male workers not to touch you, not to bother you. We could possibly glean from that they had been bothering her before while she was waiting. Right, so Boaz is saying, I'm allowing you to come and walk after my reapers to stick with my female workers. I'm telling those guys to leave you alone, right? And then he goes on, Vitzamit v'halacht el hakelim v'shatit ma'asher yishavun hanarim. If you're thirsty, go and drink, right? I want you to be able to feel comfortable, be at home. V'tipol al paneh v'tishtachu arza v'tomer elav madu amatzati chen be'enecha lahakireni v'anochi nochriya. Right, he is going above and beyond. He's protecting her. He's giving her an opportunity to get food and also offering her water. And she says immediately, she bows down to him and says, "Madua matzati chen beinecha? Why have I found favor in your eyes?" Which, of course, that's exactly what she was looking for. Right? She tells Naomi, "I'm going to find someone who I will find favor in his eyes in order to get food from his field." And she has found him. But once she finds him, she could hardly believe it. Right? Why have I found favor in your eyes? Va'anochi nochriya. Right? She knows exactly why her situation is difficult, why she is unlikely to find someone who is going to help her, because she is a nochriya, because she is a foreigner. Va'ya'an Boaz. Right? So Boaz doesn't say, you know, well, it's the right thing to do, or he doesn't say, like, I'm a nice guy. What does he say? Va'yomer la, hugadli. It was told to me, kol asher asit chamotech acharei motishech. Everything that you did with your mother-in-law after your husband died. V'ta'azvi avich v'imech v'eretz moladetech. V'telchi al am acher asher lo yadat mol shoshom. Right, you were willing to leave your parents, leave your homeland. Right, Ruth says in Parak Aleph to Naomi, al tifki'i bi le'azvech. Don't force me to leave you, Naomi. And Boaz says, you stuck with your mother-in-law and you left your family. You left your family behind in Moab. Yishalem Hashem po'alech utihi maskartech shleima me'im Hashem Elohei Yisrael asher bat lachasot tachak nafav. right? May you have full recompense from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have sought refuge, right? And not only does he recognizes what he did, what she did for Naomi, the greatness of her actions that she stuck with Naomi, leaving her family behind. And he also recognizes that when she comes, yes, is somebody saying something? Sorry. He also recognizes the entirety of what Ruth has done here. She is not out for herself. She has fully thrown her lot in with the people of Israel, right? She has come to seek refuge under Kanfei Hashchina, under the wings of Hashem. Was somebody trying to say something? I heard some noise. Nope. Okay.
I muted. I think it was just somebody unmuted. So I.
Okay.
That happens occasionally.
What?
That happens occasionally. People mistakenly unmute themselves and there's background noise. So we, you know, I try to be on top of that. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No problem. Right. So what is Boaz basically saying? Why is he being so kind to her? Because of the kindness that she did. Right. He recognizes the beauty of her actions and he does something kind for her in return. It seems to me, I've kind of implied as we've slowly been going through the verses, both the past couple of weeks and today, that there are a lot of things in the story that are unclear, that you can interpret people's actions this way and you can interpret them that way. Right? Is the Na'ar just doing his job, or is he being somewhat critical and negative about Ruth? Right? Is he being mean? For example, we also discussed a little bit about Naomi. How are we supposed to understand where she stands in this narrative? With Boaz, it seems to me that ultimately, you have to just go with your gut of what the story seems to be saying. So to go back to Naomi for a moment, although we discussed the possibilities that she might be seen as guilty, like the rest of her family, right? I think ultimately, and certainly there is by association, at least there is some of that, but ultimately she, what we see most about Naomi is her hopelessness, right? The fact that she feels like she has absolutely no future, right? That is the key of what's going on with Naomi. And here with Boaz, I think we have to let the psukim speak for themselves. So I brought up the question of, well, where was Boaz up until now, right? Why was he not helping out his relative up until this point? So first of all, before we go back to these psukim that we were looking at, I think we also just, we have to first of all just think about the story in the time period in which it took place, by which I mean, we know that Ruth and Naomi, we saw at the end of chapter one, show up in Beit Lechem at the beginning of the harvest season, right? And we know from what's going on here that they're still in the harvest season. So it hasn't been a tremendous amount of time since they've showed up. We also know that they showed up with almost nothing. They have nothing to eat from, but they have no way of supporting themselves. So I have to imagine that when Ruth says to Naomi, I'm going to go out and find food, she didn't wait a long time to do that. She probably waited a few days at most until she started to do this, because otherwise they were going to starve, right? There's nothing in the story that tells us there's anybody who's helping them out before now. So when she goes out, I have to imagine it's pretty soon after they arrive in Beit Lechem. And so now we see Boaz, and I'm just going to go back the first things that we see here. Right, so he shows up in his field, right, and he immediately sees her and says, "Who is that?" Right, and the Na'ar says what he says, and immediately he turns to her and he says, "Wait, I've heard about you, right? You're the one who came back with Naomi, and you did all these great and wonderful and beautiful things." And he immediately repays her for her kindness tenfold, right? And what do I mean by tenfold? He not only says that she can of course glean in the field like everybody else, but he says, I'm going to protect you. You can stick with my girls, and you can drink when they take water, right? And we'll see to continue, right? She says here, "V'atomer emtzachen be'inecha adoni ki nichamti v'chidibarta al lev shivchatecha v'anochi lo'heyeh ke'achat shivchatecha." right? You are so kind to me, Ruth says. Right? She doesn't understand why he's being so nice to her. You have spoken to me gently. You've tried to comfort me. Right? She's taken aback. She expects at most someone to give her a little something to eat. But he's being kind and he's being comforting. And she says, you speak to me like I am one of your shvachot. I'm one of your ne'arot. Right? V'anochi lo hayek ha'chat shivchotecha. But I'm not. I'm not even one of your servants. And you're treating me so kindly, right? The assumption being, and this also says something about Boaz, that he treats his servants well, right? But she's saying, but I'm not. I'm just a stranger who wandered into your field and you're treating me like one of your workers. And then he says, at mealtime, Boaz said to her, come over and partake of the meal and dip your morsel in the vinegar. So she sat down beside the reapers, right? She is being invited to come and partake of the meal of his workers. He handed her roasted grain and she ate her fill and had some left over, right? Vatochal vatispa vitotar, right? So not only is she invited to eat, but she is given so much food that she is satiated and has enough left over, right? So he's not only giving her a little bit, he's giving her a lot, so much so that she's able to be full and still have enough left over. Vatakom lilaket vaitzav Boaz et ne'arav lemor. She then gets up to either continue gleaning or start gleaning, depending on how you understood what happened earlier. And he says to his ne'arim, he says to his workers, gam ben ha'omarim tilaket v'lo tachlimuha. Basically, let her glean wherever she wants and don't tell her off. V'gam shol tasholu la min hatzvatim v'azavtem v'likta v'lo tigaruba. You know, kind of casually leave behind by accident extra for her to take. And then don't make her feel bad about it. Meaning, help her out without her knowing that you're helping her out. Vatilaket basade ad ha'erev vatachpot et asher likta vayhi ke'efa se'orim. Right. So she works till the evening, and she has managed to collect an efa, right? A certain measurement called an efa of barley. Right now, in case you're wondering what an efa is, excuse me one second. When Bnei Israel ate man in the desert, right, when the manna came down and they ate in the desert, it says that every person would have an asirita efa, right? They would have a tenth of an efa. And that was like a portion that would be enough for them for the day. Now she has an efa, meaning 10 times the amount that was considered enough to eat for a day in the desert. So meaning she has succeeded with Boaz's help to collect a tremendous amount of food. Vatisa vatavo ha'ir vatere chamota et asher liketa. She comes home and Naomi sees what she has managed to gather. Vatotze vatiten la et asher hotira misvav'a. She gives to her mother-in-law that which was left over after she was done eating, meaning she's not talking about the grain now, that she Naomi saw, but she also gives to her mother-in-law the leftover food from her meal. So not only does she get enough food to eat so much that she can't finish it all, but she's allowed to take home what's left, right, to give to her mother-in-law. You get almost a sense that Boaz was purposely giving her enough so that she can take home to her mother. We see her mother-in-law. We see that later on, not today, but we'll see a similar thing later on in the story. Vatomer la chamota, efo likat tayom, va'ana asit. Where were you gathering grain today? Yehi makirech baruch, right? The one who showed you favor, the one who did this kindness for you, should be blessed. Meaning, she does not yet know who it is, but she says, wow, the amount that Ruth came home was enough for her to realize that somebody was being extraordinarily kind to Ruth. Vatagid lachamota et asher asta imo, right? She tells her mother-in-law everything. Vatomer shema isha asher asiti imo hayom Boaz. Only then does Naomi know that it is Boaz that has helped her. So what we see here is Boaz not simply doing what he has to do. He's not saying to his Na'ar, that's fine, let her come to the field and get what she needs, like all the other Aniyim and all the other Gerim that come together. He is going out of his way to be exceedingly kind to her. He's going above and beyond, what we would say in Hebrew as Lifnim Mishurat Adin, right? Going much beyond what the letter of the law says that he has to do. And it is so obvious that Naomi recognizes right away that this is something unusual. Right. So when we see Boaz immediately turn to Ruth and do all, he's like gushing with kindness from the moment that he sees her, one almost gets the feeling that he had heard about this, right? And perhaps hadn't even had an opportunity yet to help, right? You could argue, well, maybe he hasn't done anything yet. And that might be maybe what the Midrash that we saw the first class was referring to, right? Remember the Midrash that compares him to Ivtzen, right? So maybe that moment of hesitation, you could say that was the trial of Boaz to see what he would do. But he outdoes himself and he clearly proves his kindness by what he does to Ruth here. And again, it's almost as if he's saying to her, well, I heard about you. I heard about the kindness that you've done, right? And then falls over himself to do kindness to her in return. Back home. Right, Naomi realizes that this is unusual, and then finally hears from Ruth that this is Boaz. Vatomer Naomi lachalata. Naomi says to her daughter-in-law, Baruch hu laHashem, asher lo azav chasto et hachayim ve'et hametim. Right, he is blessed to Hashem, right, who has not failed in his kindness to the living or to the dead. Right, meaning Hashem has been kind to us through this man. Vatomer la Naomi. Karov lanu ha'ish migoaleinu hu, right? Ruth, who is kind of in the dark of what's going on here, because presumably she has not picked up on all of the customs and laws of her new nation. And Naomi says to her, he is related to us. He is one of our migoaleinu. He's one of our redeeming kinsmen, right? We will talk about that more shortly, right? But meaning he is a close relative who he's someone who can help us out, right? So what we see here is a beautiful chain of events where Ruth does something kind and Boaz does something kind in return. And because the extent of his kindness, right, Ruth reveals who he was, and then it's clear that from here, the story has a continuation, right? Because he was kind, Naomi now knows that Ruth has come in contact with this close relative who will be significant in the continuation of their story. Vatomer Ruth ha-Moabiyah, so she now continues reporting, Ki gam amar elai im ha-na'arim asher li tidbakin, I stick to my servants, ad im kilu et kol ha-katir asher li. Right, today, she continues to say that Boaz told her that she can stay till the end of the harvest, right? Again, emphasizing the greatness of his kindness. Vatomer Naomi el Ruth kalata, tov biti, right? This is good. My daughter, ki tetzi im na'arotav, v'lo yifku'u bach b'sadeh acher. Right, it's good that you should do what he says, and don't bother with some other field. Right, if you go somewhere else, they might not be so kind. Right, Naomi is doing a reality check, both in terms of the greatness of Boaz's kindness and the fact that not necessarily everybody else would be so kind. There are those who point out that it's interesting that we keep jumping back and forth between the Na'arot, the female workers of Boaz, and the Na'arim, right? He says, you could stick with my Na'arot, and then you could sit down with my Na'arim. And then she reports, now Ruth, he said that you could stay with my Na'arim until the end of the harvest. And she says, it's good if you should stay with the Na'arot, right? So there are some people who try to say that Naomi is trying to clue her into the social, what's socially accepted in Beit Lechem. She should stick with the women, she shouldn't stick with the men. Possibly. I'm just pointing it out as we go through the psukim. Vatidvak bin Na'arot Boaz, lilaket ad kelot ktir ha-se'orim u ktir ha-chitim. Right, so she stays through the barley harvest, which is when they arrived, all the way through the wheat harvest, right? So we have, to put it on the calendar, barley harvest starts in Pesach time, and she goes through the wheat harvest, which is during the time of Shavuot. Okay, so she stays, and Vateshev at Chamota, and she stayed with her mother-in-law. So either, as the translation here says, she then returned home to her mother-in-law, or possibly during this time, she would go out to glean, but she was with her mother-in-law. The emphasis being that this whole time, of course, it's in order to help not only feed herself, but to provide food for Naomi as well. Okay. Okay. Now, the next thing that happens, and I've skipped a few psukim here, something which we're going to go and look at in more detail in a later class in this series. But what happens next? So Naomi has revealed to Ruth that he is a goel. So what is a goel? So when this is all described in the book of Vayikra, the idea of a nachala, of the land that belonged to a specific family, was very important in the society of that time, and of course also in the laws of the Torah, right? So just to mention a couple of things where this comes up. So first of all, in stories, in narrative, right? In the book of Melachim, you have a king Achav, right? He's an idol worshiping king who is very wishy-washy in his fear of God, and he is badly influenced by his wife Izebel, who is a worshiper of Baal. And he decides one day that he wants a vineyard of a man named Navot, right? And he wants it no matter what. He's very determined to get this vineyard from him. And Navot is horrified. He said, how can I give nachalot avotai, the nachala of my fathers, to you? And the story, as you might be familiar with, you know, Izebel, who is, you know, the complete villain, is that a word? In the story, she basically has Navot killed off so that Achav can have his vineyard. But for our purposes, the story illustrates the degree to which Nachalat Avot was so important in society at that time. Another example, of course, is Yovel, right? Yovel, which happens every 50 years. If for some reason a field has been sold out of the property of a specific family during the Yovel, all of it goes back. Everybody's nachala goes back to the way where it was before, to the owners and to its original owners, right? Again, the emphasis being that the nachala is extraordinarily important. So another one of these laws is the nachala of the goel, the law of the goel. So, which is that if, again, there is a field that for some reason or another has had to be sold and it is no longer for one reason or another in the possession of the original owner, it's the responsibility of a close family member to purchase the field so that it remains within the family. Okay, this is described in detail in the book of Vayikra. Right, so when Naomi says to Ruth, he is our goel, meaning he is a close relative who is in this position to redeem a field. Now we'll see that the issue of the field with Naomi is a little bit confusing, but tied up with this is also the issue of Ruth herself. And Naomi, again, we're going to look at this more carefully in a couple of weeks, but just to give you to fill in a few details that we need in order to see some other details, Naomi does something somewhat surprising. She tells Ruth both basically to dress up nicely and go down into the fields where Boaz is in the middle of the night when he's not expecting it, and to kind of surprise him. And she basically sets up what seems to be a rather seductive scene, which will kind of trick Boaz into, starting a relationship with her. We'll keep the details under wraps until we look at that more carefully in a couple of weeks. But anyway, she's down there in the field with him and it's nighttime and he's a little bit, you know, he's had something to drink, we're told. And he says, Vayomer mi at, right? Who are you? Vatomer anochi rut amatecha, ufarasta chnafecha adamatcha ki goelata. Right, I am your handmaiden root, right? And spread your robe over your handmaid, which is apparently like a metaphor for marriage, because you are the goel, right? You are the redeemer. You're the redeeming kinsman, meaning you should marry me, right? He exclaimed, I'll go back to the Hebrew, Vayomer brucha at lahashem biti, heitavt chastecha acharon min harishon. Once again, Ruth, you have proven to be a wonderful person. You've done a great chesed again, that you didn't go after any other men, right? Rather, you're insistent on sticking with me so that you could, you know, help Naomi out some more, right? That I should be the goel who will help out your family and Naomi's family. Va'ata biti, al tir'i, don't be afraid. Kol asher tomri e'eselach, I will do everything that you want, right? Ki yodea kol shar amiki eshet chayla. That's the pasuk we saw earlier, right? Everybody knows that you are an eshet chayla. I am going to help you, right? You deserve to be helped. Ve'ata, but while it is true that I am a goel, right, I am a redeeming kinsman, yesh goel karov mimeni. But there is another redeemer, right, another close relative, who is closer than I am. Meaning that there's an order of who can be a goel for any given family. And Boaz is saying it's true that I'm on the list, but there's someone who's much closer. And so I don't have the right to purchase, to be the goel. Let's talk about it first in terms of the field. To be the goel, to be the person to buy this field, which I'm willing, happy to do, but I don't have the right to do it because there's someone in line in front of me. Okay, so looking back at what we saw about Boaz earlier, right? So if we're wondering, why does Ruth have to go through this entire setup that she's done here in the field, kind of like almost tricking Boaz into trapping him into being into admitting that he's to be the goel. Why isn't he stepping up and doing the right thing right away? And so Boaz tells her here, well, because I can't. I cannot be the redeemer when there's somebody else who has that right before me, right? So I am not allowed to do it yet. So he gathers together the Ziknei Ha'ir, right? He gets together a whole public forum to take care of this issue of the Geula, of the family of the field, and ultimately the family of Naomi. And he stands before this group, and he speaks to the man who is actually nameless, and he's quite famously known as Ploni Almoni, which is basically the Hebrew way of saying he's Mr. Anonymous, right? This man does not have a name, and he says, "When you were Vayomer Boaz, Biyom Knotcha Hasadeh Miyad Naomi." Umeit ruta moavia, eshet hamet kanita lakim et shem hamet al nachalato. Right. So sorry, back up a little bit. So first, before the psukim that I put in front of you, he first says to Ploni Almoni, "Are you willing? Do you want to be the goel of the field of Naomi?" Right. And Ploni Almoni agrees. He says yes. Ani Agala will be the person to redeem the field for the family. But then Boaz continues, and that's what we just read. He says, but on the day that you acquire the property of Naomi and Ruth, right? Eshet hamet kanita lahakim shem hamet anachlato. You must also acquire the wife of the deceased so as to perpetuate the name of the deceased upon his estate. Right. So if when you're at the same time that you are going to redeem the field, you also need to marry the wife of the deceased, meaning in this case Ruth, right, not Naomi, so that the name of the deceased can be perpetuated on his estate, meaning you're going to get this man's field. So you also have to marry Ruth, and the assumption is, and have a child with her, so that there'll be an heir who can then inherit that field and perpetuate the name of the deceased upon his estate, meaning that the nachala of I guess it's Mahlon, married to Ruth, or if you want to make it broader, the estate of Elimelech will return to a descendant of Elimelech, right? So that the Nachala will remain within the, not only the general family, but the exact family. Now this, of course, is connected to the idea of Yibum, right? So Yibum, levirate marriage, is a law in the Torah, which says that if a man dies childless, so the brother of the deceased has to marry the widow, the childless widow, and have a child that will perpetuate the name of the man who died without an heir, without a descendant. And this is considered in the Torah an act of, not, I mean, it's something that you must do, it's a law, but it's an act of responsibility. Right, it's showing responsibility to allow your brother to have an heir, to have his name continue, because without that, his name dies out. Right, he will not have someone to carry on after him. If someone does not do yibum, if he does not perform this levirate marriage, right, by marrying the widow and having an heir, then they do what's called chalitza, where there's a whole a tekes, a whole thing that they have to do in order to release this woman so that she is no longer going to marry this man. But this is seen negatively in the Torah, right? That you're not acting responsibly. You're not taking responsibility for the family of your brother. And that's the law in the Torah. Now, what's tricky about the story here in Megillat Ruth is that we're not talking about real Yibum, right? Mahlon Chiyon did not have any other brothers. Naomi makes that quite clear in Perek Aleph, right, when she says to Ruth, I have no more sons to give you, right? Meaning I have no one who is going to help perpetuate this family with you. You have no future here with me. So real Yibum is impossible because there's nobody to perform it. So what is happening here is something similar to Yibum, right? It's the same idea, but it's not really within the laws of what one must do for Yibum. And so technically, it is not required, right? Ploni Almoni does not have to do Yibum here or even have to really do Chalitza because this isn't actually Yibum, right? Because we're not talking about Ploni Almoni's brother and his sister-in-law. So Boaz had now tells Ploni Almoni, there's a catch. If you want to be the goel of the field and you're going to purchase the field for the family, it's not just to keep it within the general family and now you will be the owner. You have to also marry Ruth. Yes, I know, Boaz might say on the side, this is not a requirement. You are not required by the law to do this, right? But it is the right thing to do, right? That you should not only take the field, but you should also marry Ruth and that way give the field a true heir and continue the family of Naomi and Elimelech. And he says, Vayomer ha-goel, lo uchal ligol. So then he reneges on what he said before. Pen ashchit et nachalati, right? Lest I impair my own estate. Now there are many interpretations of what exactly that means. According to some, he wasn't wealthy enough to be able to do this, meaning to acquire a field and a wife and more heirs, right? For a farmer, unless you're extraordinarily wealthy, might not be something that's viable, right? So he claims that he's not able to do it. Some say that his wife wouldn't be happy about it if he married an additional woman, right? So this will be problematic for that. Others suggest that he doesn't want to have a child who won't actually be his heir, right? Because he's doing it for the family of Naomi, right? So there are all sorts of interpretations of what excuse he gives as to why exactly he doesn't want to do it. But in the end of the day, he doesn't want to do it. So he gives up both the field and also does not marry Ruth. לא אוכל לגאול פן השחית את נחלתי, גאל לך אתה את גאולתי, כי לא אוכל לגאול. So he says to Boaz, you take over my right of redemption. So you can now acquire the field, for I am unable to exercise it. So similar to what we've seen in a number of characters both in the past, how are we supposed to understand Ploni Almoni? Right? On the one hand, he's not doing anything really wrong, right? He gives up his right to the field, right? But that's okay, because somebody else could do that, could buy it for the family. But the reason he's giving up the right to the field, in other words, it's within his right to pass it on to somebody else. And in terms of marrying Ruth, well, there's no Torah law that requires him to do so. So technically he's okay, right? He doesn't have to do this. But he passes it on to Boaz, who then says, he had already promised to Ruth that he will do everything that she needs, right? He just has to take care of this technicality first, perhaps suggesting that he understood that not so many others are going to want to do this. But Boaz, as opposed to Ploni Almoni, is willing to go above and beyond. Not only will he redeem the field, but he will also marry Ruth, which goes not only above and beyond what he has to do as a goel, but it's him taking responsibility, doing the right thing, even though technically he's not required to do so, right? So again, we see Boaz acting lifni mishurat adin, going above and beyond what he actually has to do. So far we've seen three personalities, right, with whom to contrast Boaz on the one hand and Ruth on the other hand. First, we've seen Orpah. Right, Orpah decides to go back to Moab, and there are plenty of Mefreshim and Midrashim that see her as a negative light. But ultimately, Orpah wasn't doing anything terribly wrong. She was only doing what her mother-in-law was begging her to do, right, to go back to Moab. And she does the standard. She goes back. It's Ruth who goes above and beyond and stays with Naomi. And similarly, right, we see the Na'ar. Right, the Na'ar either treats Ruth possibly badly, or maybe he just treats her regularly, right? Yeah, she's this Moavia and she's here, whatever. Whereas Boaz steps in and he goes above and beyond, right? He does far more in the field than he is required to do. And again, we see here in the case of the Geula of the family, again, he was not first in line to redeem the field, but once he does, he not only redeems the field, but he goes above and beyond, and he also redeems Ruth and the entire family. So Boaz is the lifni mishurat adin, similar, like we saw, to Ruth earlier. So to go back to what we saw at the very, very end of last week's class, right? We looked at that Mishnah from Pirkei Avot, where it talks about all different types of people. And it interestingly says that if somebody says what's mine is mine and what's yours is yours, meaning I have my property, you have your property, and you know that's normal. Some people say that's like a regular person. And some people say that that's stone, right? So on the one hand, that sounds rather harsh, right? To say that what's mine is mine and what's yours and yours seems perfectly normal. Right, and that's like all the normal people that we see in the book, right? Who don't do anything particularly great, but neither do they do anything particularly bad. But the other opinion, though, that's stone. In what way is that stone? Because that's the way that society falls apart. If all you do is what you are required to do, and you never go beyond to do something great, then that's when things don't happen the way that they are supposed to. So that's the note that we're going to pick up more on for next week to explore further how we see that in the book of Ruth. Now, if anyone has any comments or questions, I'm happy.
Thank you. There are a whole bunch of comments and questions in the chat box if you want to take a look.
Okay.
Unless you prefer me to take a look for you, but you can take a look, whatever you prefer.
Okay, I found it. Okay, Ruth is called Eshet Chayil, Boaz is called Ish Gibor Chayil. There is still a need to understand the meaning of Gibor. That is correct. I agree with that. I'm not sure that I have a full answer to that at the moment. But yes, you're correct. It's not exactly the same it's not the exact same title. Off the top of my head, although I'm sure there's a lot more to research on this matter. So first of all, it's possible that Gibor does refer to a warrior, right? I just brought the comparison to root to show that at least the ish chayel part might imply more. And that is indeed what we see about root, about Boaz in the parts of his life that we know about. Another possibility, and again, I would have to look to see if this is true holds water for biblical Hebrew and not just Mishnaic, but certainly we have the idea in the Mishnah, Ezehu Gibor HaKovesh Et Yitzro, right? Someone who has restraint, has power in that sense, and Boaz certainly does restraint in the extremely positive sense, both in that story down in the field, which we'll explore more at a different time, but in general, he is a person who is a very strong character. And is able to do the right thing because he is strong against the grain. And perhaps it's alluding to that, but I'd have to look up the word gibor a little bit more to see how that works in biblical Hebrew. The words of the na'ar sound like the butler in Mitzrayim Paro that Yosef is a na'ar Ivri Eved. Yes, I think you're correct. I think it is something very dismissive about the way that it is said. Emphasizing the foreignness, right, and also the, belittling the status of the person. I agree entirely. I think that's correct. Boaz calls her a na'ara. That sounds like a girl, not a widowed woman. If she looks younger than her years, could he be asking whose family is she from? It's an interesting point about the fact that he calls her na'ara, because on the one hand, as Ilana said in the previous comment, na'ara sounds like it's belittling, except that Boaz calls her that as well. So it's not referring necessarily to age, although it's possible. It could be, but first to answer your question, it is possible that she's asking, that he is asking what family is she from. There's a commentary, I must admit, I don't remember which one off the top of my head, which suggests that he sees her run down state and saying, like, who is this child? Like, why is she so neglected? Why is she looking so hungry? Right? Who does she belong to? Right? Why is she here by herself? So it could be in that sense. It could be that if you're very undernourished, right, on the one hand, you might look very worn and tired, but you also might look thinner, smaller. So maybe. We also know exactly how old she was when she got married. So maybe she still was relatively young. It is also possible that, in other words, he talks about his ne'arot, the women who work in his field. So it could be that he sees her and he's asking, whose ne'ara is this? Whose worker is this? So that's also possible. Like, it's someone he doesn't recognize, but she seems to be a worker in the field. So that's possible. Is there a link to the sources? I will send them afterwards. Which I've done in the past also. I hope that those have gotten there. So yes, and again, I hope that next week I'll try to get the sources to everybody ahead of time. How does he know all her history, leaving her land, etc.? That's an excellent question. It's not clear. Like I said, it could very well just be connected to what we saw in Perek Aleph, that there's like this buzz in the marketplace when Naomi comes back, which again, points possibly to the fact that Naomi had come from an important family and now she's coming back. The buzz seems to be relatively negative, but it could be because of that. He heard, you know, Sach HaKol, Beit Lechem is a pretty small town. So it could, even without, Facebook or whatever, think word probably got around pretty quickly. So I would assume that it was just something like that, that the rumors had gotten to him as well. Naomi must have told people who told Boaz, meaning then that's how he found out. I don't know. Like I said, I'm pretty sure Beit Lechem was a pretty small town, despite its importance. It was still a small town. Whether Naomi was specifically responsible for telling him, I don't know. In my feeling, and again, this goes back to judging people in the story by what they project, it seems to me that Naomi was very passive. She has very little hope that anybody is going to be helping her out. I don't see her reaching out to somebody. And she's surprised almost when, you know, when Root happens to fall upon Boaz's field. So I'm not convinced that she specifically told Boaz. Although I do think that it's possible that somebody told Boaz, because after all, Naomi was from his family. So he might have specifically gotten back to members of Naomi's family that she had returned. All the more reason Boaz should have helped Naomi and Ruth immediately after he heard about Naomi's return. I think that's an interesting question. I think that's an interesting question, which I tried to address earlier. I think that even when he did help, it was fairly close after they returned, right? Because again, I don't think that Ruth could have waited very long to go out to look for food. And my feeling, again, it's hard for me to prove beyond the feeling, is that he had heard about her, and as soon as he hears who he is, he immediately jumps in to help her, meaning, oh yes, I'm glad I found you. Like, that's the feeling that I get from the story, right? And that it wasn't that, although you could still ask, why didn't he immediately go and find Naomi and bring over some food? My feeling still is that he did help fairly quickly. Although again, the question is a good one. Why did Naomi not tell Ruth to glean in the field of her relative? Was it shame or pride? It's another good question. Possibly there was an issue of shame. There are a lot of Mefarshim who like to point out that Ruth didn't even bother asking Naomi if she wants to come along, because she assumed that Naomi had no interest in becoming a pauper in her own town. So it could very well be. She could also, you know, again, this is all us trying to understand things from the story that aren't said explicitly, but it could very well be that in addition to the shame of not having anything to eat, there's also the shame of having left and gone to Moab and spent a lot of time there and only now coming back. And, you know, quite possibly the people of Beit Lechem are unhappy with her. And it's also possible that one could say, although it doesn't seem in his nature, but it's possible, going back to the Boaz question, it's possible that maybe Boaz did not rush to help her for the same reason. And only when he hears about Ruth, and then when he sees that Ruth is there trying to get food for herself, but also for Naomi, right, which of course is the exact opposite of the expectation of a Moaviyah, right, the nation who doesn't help people, who doesn't give food, who doesn't bring water. So it could be that that's when he realizes, perhaps, that's the moment he realizes he has to step in. I'm not sure I believe that, but it is possible reading that he recognizes the goodness of Ruth and then steps in to change the situation. If he couldn't redeem her, couldn't he have sent food over? Okay, there we go. Well, he does. In other words, once Ruth shows up in his field, he does provide food from that moment on. What he doesn't do is redeem right away, which he says is because he's not first in line. So the question is, why didn't he immediately come and help? So that I think I tried to address, possibly successfully, I'm not sure. Hold on. Was he afraid of embarrassing them? Was this a more dignified way? I mean, he definitely tries to do it in a dignified way, the sense of kind of helping Ruth out so that in a way that she might not realize that she's being helped. So that's certainly a more dignified way. Again, there might have been the situation might have been somewhat touchy between Naomi and everybody else. Not entirely clear. Similar to Yibum, like Tamar and Yehuda, correct? Right. This sort of like Yibum that isn't really Yibum is similar to the story of Tamar and Yehuda, where they're talking about a daughter and a father-in-law, not a brother. We will talk more about Tamar and Yehuda in a future class. The fact that he's called Ploni Amonli is a judgment against him. That is absolutely correct, right? Even though there could be another explanation as to why he doesn't redeem. Right, in other words, either he's done something negative and he's lost his name, right? It's not an accident that the person who doesn't perpetuate the name of somebody else is not named either. There are some who point out that the Na'ar is also nameless. But certainly Ploni Amonli, he's very clearly intentionally with that name. But it could also be that even if he's not doing something, again, that's terribly wrong, he's still doing the Sheli Sheli V'Shalcha Shalcha attitude, right? He's not doing anything terribly wrong, but neither is he doing something terribly great. And that's where society becomes stagnant or even negative if it goes on for too far. So yes, Ploni Amonli, regardless of how you see his actions, is not speak well of him. Hold on. It's ironic that Pliny Almoni says Pena Shchita Nachlati. He gave up the opportunity the ancestor of David, and his name is lost to history. Absolutely correct. Definitely ironic, right? He grayed up. He lost something quite great by not doing this. And then, of course, I mean, the more obvious irony that he doesn't want Lashchit et Nachalato, but he's not willing to help somebody else with their Nachala, right? So that's very much the Shari Shari B'Shocha B'Shocha. You're right, welcome. Is there anyone else here? I think that's it. All right. So I look forward to seeing everyone next week, and we will continue.
Thank you very much. Okay, we'll see you next week, please God. Okay, tomorrow morning, everybody's welcome. Marty Lakshin, 11 a.m. Eastern, Pshat, Drush, and Halacha, followed immediately by Lori Novick at 12:15 on Woman and Kriyat HaTorah, followed at 8 p.m. by Moshe Sokolov. That's our triple header tomorrow. Look forward to seeing our regular schedule Thursday, Friday, and we look forward to learning with you. And all the best, and hello, Miss Young Sachs. And want to say hello? You know, we're sort of related, kind of. You know your Aunt Adina?
Cousin Adina.
I'm not cousin Adina, right? What am I talking about? Your cousin Adina is my cousin too, you know? Yeah, she's my first cousin. We're on opposite sides, first cousins, right? Anyways, okay, it's a small world. What's your name?
What's your name?
You don't have to talk to me, okay? I don't talk to strangers either.
Her name is Adi.
That's the problem. I'm sorry. All right. We'll let you go. Lila Tov.
Okay. Have a good night.
Have a good day. It's bedtime. No, it's 9:42. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Okay. Lila Tov, everybody. Everybody have a great day. Be well. Thanks. Bye-bye.